Can the stock market use a V for victory?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The stock market left off on Friday with the Dow at an all-time high and the S&P 500 index just a point shy of that kind of milestone. In early trading, the S&P 500 again flirted with that all-time high. On Mondays, as Wall Street opens, we turn to Julian Emanuel, Executive Director, U.S. Equity and Derivatives Strategy at UBS Securities. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
So there was a market storm in earlier October, but what do you think? Skies, by and large, have cleared now?
We've gone a long way towards clearing the skies. There was an old Allied saying in World War II that V is for victory. And if you look at the market action, investors have tried to declare victory over growth concerns, health concerns, and the influence of the Fed in terms of raising rates. We think the battles have been won, but the war is never quite over.
We're covering the midterm elections here tomorrow. If the GOP ends up controlling the Senate, as many are predicting, the conventional wisdom is Republicans look out for company profits. That helps the stock market. You think we'll have some kind of post-election November boost?
There's always the possibility of that. But again, looking at the last few weeks, the V off the bottom was just so sharp that we may, in fact, actually confound the conventional wisdom and have a little bit of digestion before we go into 2015, which by all rights looks pretty good to us.
Julian Emanuel watches equities, i.e. stocks, very carefully at UBS. Julian, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Staying with the subject of tomorrow's elections, energy companies from the oil industry to companies that focus on renewables will be watching the results very carefully. We reached out to David Koniski, a public policy professor at Georgetown who focuses on energy. Professor, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Now, some argue that gridlock in Washington persists, whether or not the U.S. Senate ends up slightly Republican or still a bit Democrat after tomorrow. But what do you think? Is it fair to say that if you're in the energy business or you're an energy consumer, what happens in these elections could make a difference?
I think it is fair to say that gridlock will persist to some degree, although I do think the agenda that we'll see pursued in the Senate in particular will change quite a bit from what we've seen over the past couple of years.
Do you see if the Senate gets a bit more GOP-oriented, that there'll be more than rhetoric, but in fact action to curb, for instance, the Obama administration's efforts to fix climate change?
I think that's right. I think we could expect activity in two different areas. The first would be a major effort to push back against President Obama's climate agenda, especially the Clean Power Plan, which the EPA released last June. And that would be sort of a general return to a fossil fuel agenda, where first and foremost would be the Keystone XL pipeline. And there may even be sufficient votes to pass a bill forcing President Obama to approve the pipeline. We're likely to see efforts by Republicans in the Senate to sort of allow more oil and gas exploration on federal land, perhaps lift the export ban on crude oil, try to expedite the approval of liquefied natural gas terminals, which has been quite controversial in recent years.
Now, you've argued that America needs a new energy policy, despite or perhaps because oil and gas are in such abundant supply. Certainly, people see the point when energy prices are skyrocketing, why we need a new policy. But if they're cheap, why the pressing need to really think about the future of this?
Well, the way Americans think about energy is twofold. They certainly do consider the cost, but that isn't the only dimension that they care about. They also care quite a bit about the environmental costs associated with using different energy sources, particularly fossil fuels. So I think the public will likely continue to be frustrated because not much would change, whereas they would like to see a much different energy future that relies much more heavily on renewable sources and other clean sources of energy.
David Koniski is at Georgetown University, keeps an eye on energy policy. Professor, thank you.
It was my pleasure.
The biggest of soap and household products companies has been ordered to suspend its operations in Argentina. The Argentine government accuses Procter & Gamble of Cincinnati of an elaborate tax swindle. It's not clear if by suspend, authorities mean stop selling shampoo and soap and or closing factories. P&G says it does not get fancy with its taxes because those kinds of strategies are, quote, not sustainable. As a Mainer, it's hard to fathom that not everyone across these United States is so interested in those McDonald's lobster rolls they add to the menu up there in the Pine Tree State. But amid lackluster sales, McDonald's is acknowledging that it has to do a better job accounting for regional tastes. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson reports.
For years, McDonald's succeeded with a one-size-fits-all approach. When we look at what has made McDonald's a very strong brand, it is consistency, convenience, affordability, and strong, fast service.
But Darren Testano, with food research firm Technomic, says today diners are more interested in customization, like choosing what goes in your burrito at Chipotle. So McDonald's has announced it's going to take a more regional focus, breaking the country into four zones instead of its old three to better respond to consumer tastes.
The same things that work nationally don't work nationally now.
John Gordon is a food industry analyst with Pacific Management Consulting Group.
We had spicy chicken wings, and that didn't work. And, well, it worked in Detroit, didn't it? Well, yeah, but it didn't work in Salt Lake City.
Gordon says this is a small step, but symbolic of the way McDonald's needs to decentralize, and a sign that bigger changes may be coming. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
And markets generally don't like uncertainty, and some market players are waking up to the possibility today that results may be so close in some key races tomorrow that it may take runoffs in Georgia and Louisiana to decide who controls the U.S. Senate. That means we may not know who will run those powerful Senate committees until early in the new year. If this sounds far-fetched, know that the parties are already doing the contingency planning. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.